ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। So today, being Ekadasi, as tradition here in Juhu, we speak about Prabhupada Lila, our pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. And rather than read the Lilamrita, I was told that I could talk about different pastimes and experiences of Srila Prabhupada, if that's all right. Okay. So very, very happy to be here and very grateful for this opportunity to glorify His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master. What I'd like to do is, first of all, I would like to connect a pastime of Srila Prabhupada with our current readings in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the sixth canto of the story of Ajamil and the glories of the holy name. Then I would like to, because we are beginning our strategic planning sessions today, mention a couple of things about Srila Prabhupada in regards to this idea of planning our future society, and then talk about some of the other qualities and pastimes that I saw that exemplified these things in Srila Prabhupada. So that's what I'm going to do. A couple days ago, Prabhupada's Maharaj was giving class on the story of Ajamil in the first chapter of the sixth canto, and he quoted this verse from the second chapter. I think it's verse 14. It says, "One who chants the holy name of the Lord is immediately freed from the reactions of unlimited sins, even if he chants indirectly to indicate something else, jokingly, for musical entertainment, or even neglectfully. This is accepted by all learned scholars of the scriptures." So these words, parisham, jokingly, and stobam, musical entertainment, are interesting. Srila Prabhupada demonstrated that principle very, very nicely to us. In July of 1776, I'm saying 1776 because that's the time when the Declaration of Independence and America was founded. Well, in 1976, 200 years later, was the centennial, and 4th of July was that date, which was the 200-year centennial of America's birth. So it was a very, very important big day, and that's when Srila Prabhupada came to Washington, D.C., to our Potomac Temple, the capital. So I was there during that time when Srila Prabhupada was with us in Washington. One thing there, Srila Prabhupada was told that there was going to be this huge gathering on 4th of July in that whole mall area, or that area where all the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Memorial, it'll just be filled with hundreds of thousands of people, and they were going to have this huge fireworks display. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, fireworks? Let us go." So we thought, all right, that sounds fun. And of course, getting from Potomac, which is in Maryland, a few, 10 miles outside D.C., is no small feat during the 4th of July when about 500,000 or a million people are all trying to get there. So the devotees knew this, and they said, well, it's a good time to have a Harinam, sort of a traveling Harinam at the same time. So we all loaded up in cars, and in front of Srila Prabhupada's car was a van full of many devotees and brahmacharis who were having ecstatic kirtan. And, of course, they had all the doors open. And as we traveled over, it's called the George Washington Parkway, which kind of overlooks the D.C. area. It's kind of up on the river, up on a hill, kind of a cliff. Anyway, thousands and thousands of people were parked along the parkway so they could get a good view of the fireworks. And this was mid-afternoon, and you can imagine it's a holiday. What do young Americans on a holiday do? They get drunk, of course. So anyway, they're all drinking, they're partying, they're having a great time for this festival. And we are sort of slowly, about 10 miles an hour, this whole procession of devotees. And in the front of it is this big Harinam party in the van. The doors are open, having a wild, ecstatic kirtan. Now, of course, as we're going, everyone is hearing this kirtan. And these young, rather inebriated, intoxicated people, they're making fun, a lot of them. They're joking about the Hare Krishna, so they're chanting Hare Krishna, and they're saying, "Hey, Hare Krishna." Anyway, a lot of it's just to stay here in this in this mood of parihasham, joking, or perhaps they're enjoying the music, stove hum. And so anyway, we finished finally, got down there. It's a great endeavor. We saw a couple fireworks. Prabhupada said, okay, we were at the Lincoln Memorial, and Prabhupada said, okay, that's enough. You know, he was not that impressed. At any rate, so then we went back. So the point of the story is this. Afterwards, Srila Prabhupada said, all of those young boys and girls who were chanting when they heard the Harinam party, he said, even if they were making fun or they were laughing or they were joking, he said, it does not matter. They are getting eternal benefit and their spiritual life is beginning. So this is confirming that Srila Prabhupada was showing us, demonstrating us, this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam in action. How indeed, even no matter how someone is chanting, any way that they're hearing the holy name is to their great benefit. And so Prabhupada, this was so typical of Srila Prabhupada's manner of preaching and the way that he instructed and trained us. He was always giving us examples, always showing us how to move forward in Krishna consciousness, how to spread Krishna consciousness, and how to preach. Now, to relate this Prabhupada's mood a little bit to our strategic planning efforts, which begin today with so many devotees from all over the world who are here to help plan the future of spreading Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada's movement, Srila Prabhupada actually gave me an instruction on strategic planning in 1972 or 73, my initiation letter. I didn't know it at the time. I only realized about 30 years later what Srila Prabhupada was saying, as is often the case. It takes us many years to fully comprehend the depth of Srila Prabhupada's instructions to us. In my initiation letter, it was actually to two or three of us who were getting initiated in Chicago. Prabhupada said, I should wait for this. Must be 8 o'clock. He said, you are all intelligent boys and... He was always very encouraging, too. He said, you are all very intelligent boys and girls. Therefore, my request to you is that you study the science of Krishna consciousness and solve all the problems of the world. It was just a very small instruction. All we had to do was solve all the problems of the world. But here's the important part. By systematic propaganda, as far as you are able to do it. So... many times Prabhupada told us to preach, so many things, distribute books, chant Hare Krishna, but here he specifically mentioned systematic propaganda. So in other words, Prabhupada was always very encouraging. But in this particular case, I finally realized that he means that it takes an organized, efficient, and planned approach to effectively spread Krishna consciousness. And that is what Srila Prabhupada was always demonstrating to us. That far-reaching thinking of seeing to the future of how Krishna consciousness could be spread and how we had to plan and organize. And there's so many instances, and many, many devotees have so many more examples than I do, of how Srila Prabhupada was always planning. You know, he always had, you know, some idea going. And it was interesting because those of us that were there during Srila Prabhupada's manifest pastimes on this earth, it was always amazing that Srila Prabhupada would come up with a new idea all the time. We think all these things were just in place. They weren't. It wasn't that Prabhupada just unveiled everything about Krishna consciousness all at once. It would have been too much for us. We couldn't have comprehended it. So we got the philosophy little by little. When many of us came, there was only maybe the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam even printed. And so we would get those cantos one by one, and more knowledge and information was revealed to us. In the same way, Prabhupada revealed his plans for spreading Krishna consciousness little by little. And, you know, we never knew. Somebody read, I believe, in one of our meetings the other day, Konteya Prabhu was reading a letter from 1969 or... something like that, or 68, when Srila Prabhupada was real frustrated with trying to start a temple in India. He was in America, and he said, I've spent $100, and that $100 was lost, and Yuchudananda Maharaj is trying, or Prabhu, I don't know if he was a sannyasi at the time, he was trying to do something, but it's not working. He says, I think we should not forget about India. We should just concentrate on starting temples in the West. Well, obviously, 2 years later, Srila Prabhupada realized the time is right. He came back to India, and the rest is history. We have this incredible explosion of ISKCON and tremendous success throughout India. But Srila Prabhupada, you know, knew when the time was right. You know, it's not that he wasn't thinking in the future that all of this was going to happen. And we know historically, just here in this wonderful Juhu temple, you know, you all know the history of how Srila Prabhupada fought and struggled to establish this temple and to establish Radharasa Vihari here, because he had that divine knowledge, that inspiration from Krishna, that this was meant to be done and this was going to happen and succeed. So Prabhupada always had this dynamic vision. And he tried to lead us to that and to bring us along in that vision. So I was thinking about some of the qualities of Srila Prabhupada and some of those, and how he tried to teach us by his own qualities and his own example and instruction how we should take up similar qualities to become successful in spreading Krishna consciousness. We all know that Prabhupada challenged us to greater and greater results. We know that he asked the entire 17 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I think there were a couple other volumes of the Bhagavatam, to be done in 2 months. Devotees said, 2 years. Prabhupada said, no, 2 months. It was impossible, but they did it. Srila Prabhupada had that power of inspiration, because within the order of the spiritual master, the ability to fulfill the order of the spiritual master is also there embedded. If Srila Prabhupada said it can be done, then Krishna would make sure that it was done. And he gave us the opportunity to become part of that and become part of those historical successes. So, but I'd also like to just talk about a couple of very small pastimes that I'm familiar with. My experience with Srila Prabhupada was fairly limited. I saw Srila Prabhupada maybe 8 times in different places in my life. I had one conversation with him, which I'll tell you about later, which is not exactly earth-shaking. I mean, it is to me because it was my, you know, exchange with Srila Prabhupada, but on a larger scale, a very small exchange. So, you know, many people would have many more examples and more intimate stories, but I would just like to, since I have this opportunity, I think that it's important that those of us who are Srila Prabhupada's disciples relate our experiences and our realizations that we had with Srila Prabhupada while we're still here on this planet. So I'll take this opportunity to do that. How did Prabhupada challenge us to greater results? Sometimes it was in very small ways. And it was also interesting, part of this story about book distribution also shows you could never put anything past Srila Prabhupada. You couldn't fool him, even if the devotees tried. Not that they would try to in a bad way, but sometimes we wanted to look good for Srila Prabhupada. We didn't want to disappoint Srila Prabhupada. And if we weren't doing so well, we might try to put our best foot forward, so to speak. I'm saying not in a bad way, but you know, you want to sometimes appear, you know, so that Srila Prabhupada would be pleased with us. So I was in Miami, I think this was 1975, and we really hadn't been distributing books. We hadn't, and we knew at that time, that was Srila Prabhupada's push. Distribute books. That was his order. So we heard he was coming. We knew he was coming in a couple, 3 months. So the month before, the temple president ordered 10,000 back to Godheads, and we were all out there enthusiastically distributing back to Godheads everywhere because we knew Prabhupada was going to come, and we didn't want to tell him we're not distributing books. That would have been horrible, you know. Anyway, so Srila Prabhupada comes. He comes to the airport, and Srila Prabhupada, one of his first questions is, how are my books being distributed here? And the temple president said, we've distributed 10,000 back to Godheads this month. And Srila Prabhupada goes, oh, and my big books, how many have you distributed? They said, none, Srila Prabhupada. So in one sense, of course, he was kind of calling him on it because, you know, Prabhupada knew everything, you know. But he was also telling us, all right, don't just be content with you've done this, now distribute big books. He was all, and which we did. We started, of course. So he was always in that way. And here's a very, very tiny incident. but demonstrates the mood of how Prabhupada was so attentive to detail and to always try to make things right and make things, you know, be done in a better way. When Prabhupada was in Miami, the house he was staying in, now, Miami, probably many of you haven't been there, it's kind of like on a coral reef, and there's just a little bit of topsoil, and we were under the shade of all these banyan trees and coconut grove. Hare Krishna, Jai Shri Shri Atsabihari. So it wasn't very, it really wasn't even very easy to grow grass. I mean, it could be done, of course, but it, you know, it was kind of even a challenge because of all the shade and everything. We had all these trees, the banyan trees, and they had all these leaves. Anyway, the backyard of the house where Prabhupada was staying was basically bare dirt. Now, that doesn't look very nice. So the film president decided, oh, well, we'll just rake all the leaves and have it just filled with leaves. At least that looks better than dirt. And so, of course, Prabhupada comes, and what does he do? He looks out and says, why aren't the leaves being raked up? And so they say, well, Prabhupada, we can't grow grass. There's no grass, so we thought we'd just put the leaves here. Oh, why can't you grow grass? Oh, you can't grow grass here, Prabhupada. Prabhupada looks down the street, looks at all the neighbors' nice manicured yards, and says, everyone else on the block is growing grass. Why can't you? So anyway, as I say, Prabhupada would always kind of catch us in those deficiencies, or if we tried to, you know, like deflect a little bit and make sure that we did things nicely. Now, some more examples of how Prabhupada was very careful about management and money and attending to details. As I said, Prabhupada came in 1976 to Potomac. I was there at that time. And here again, our temple president, we didn't have very much money. He wanted to put on a, I should say it nicely, he wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. He wanted the temple to be nice, and he wanted things to be fixed up. It was a new temple building, and, you know, and he was trying to fix it up. In the course of it, he went into quite a bit of debt. And it took us quite a few years of a lot of book distribution to pay off all that debt. But at any rate, you know, I want to say this in the right way. With good motivation, he wanted to fix the temple, make it nice for Srila Prabhupada. But he was also a little bit overspending the money that he had. He put in these very nice chandeliers, not as grandiose as this, but, you know, nice chandeliers in the temple. Prabhupada looked at him, and they said, oh, yes, we've got these nice chandeliers, and we got a big donation. And Prabhupada said, how much do they cost? And they said, $5,000. And Prabhupada said, be very careful how you spend Krishna's money. So, in other words, these were very good lessons to us. Even if it was for Krishna, it's Krishna's temple. It's not Maya. We're trying to please Krishna and glorify Krishna. But even still, be very careful with the resources that Krishna has given us and make sure that they're being spent in the right way, was the message. Another example, since I'm on Potomac, was in terms of detail. This is just one of those sort of amazing little vignettes of Srila Prabhupada. It's not a big preaching point. It just shows something about Prabhupada's amazing insight. While Prabhupada was walking in the property, there was there's an electrical transformer. You know, those transformer boxes are up on the poles, and they distribute electricity. There was a little red light blinking. Prabhupada said, why is that red light blinking on the transformer? I mean, the electric company takes care of it. We don't know. And they said, we don't know. Prabhupada said, you should find out. Well, you know, everyone's busy. Prabhupada's there. Things go on. Everyone forgot about it. Let's see, that was July. 2 months later, we have a big Janmashtami celebration. And we're running all this electricity. You know, we've got lights strung everywhere. Guess what? The transformer blows out. And it goes dark on Janmashtami. These things, and many, many of these senior devotees, more senior to myself, can tell you these little things happen all the time with Srila Prabhupada. You know, somehow, you know, just being connected with Super Soul, you know, Srila Prabhupada just, who would have ever thought, you know, you need to look at the transformer and the light and the red light on it, you know. Okay. Another thing, as we spread Krishna consciousness, we do so in a way that to enliven devotees, and we want enlivenment and new insights, and Srila Prabhupada was always providing this. Not only learning new things, telling us new things, instructing us in different ways, But Srila Prabhupada was also somewhat unpredictable. I mean, I think who's had a Mother Malati? You've had probably the most experience of anyone in the room with Srila Prabhupada. Wouldn't you say that he was a little bit unpredictable? Yeah, I mean, he might say one thing one way. He might, you didn't know, you couldn't preconceive what Srila Prabhupada. You couldn't plan a question and you knew you were going to get this answer, right? Prabhupada had this totally independent intelligence, and he knew how to answer things differently and how to respond in different ways. So while he was in D.C., the scientist, Sarup Damodara, he was Prabhu at the time, now, of course, later Maharaj, Sataputta was there. I can't remember who all was there. But they gave one of their first presents. This was before the Life Comes From Life book was published. So this was kind of their trial run. They put a lot of their information together on the whole idea of scientific presentation of Krishna conscious philosophy. And so we were in a darshan, and Srila Prabhupada was being shown all their information, and he was giving a lot of commentary and critique. I just looked recently, I was thinking about this, and in Hari Sari's diary, he has a whole chapter on when Prabhupada was in Potomac, and he gives a long account of this exchange. It's really worth reading about how Prabhupada talked about science and Krishna consciousness. So you can get a lot more information there. But just this one little note that I thought was interesting. At one point, Sarup Damodar was talking about, here are the characteristics of those things that have living symptoms. And these are characteristics of things that do not. You know, the difference between life and dead matter. And so he's starting his presentation, and he gave the example at one point. He said, like, a stone is not living. And Prabhupada goes, oh, sometimes they are. You know, so this caused a little recalibration amongst our scientists. They had to, you know, this was going to be have to, a little chapter they were going to have to rewrite or rethink. And then Prabhupada went on to explain about the six symptoms of life, right? Something comes into being, it grows, you know, eventually dwindles, etc., produces byproducts. And then some of the people, as even some of the others were saying, like a crystal grows. Prabhupada said, yes, that is a symptom of life. And then Sarup Damodara was saying something, but it doesn't metabolize. And Prabhupada said, that's all right. I mean, you know, it's different type of, it's a different life form. And Prabhupada said, mountains, sometimes they're like, and then they said, yeah, but sometimes a stone, you might see a stone and it's not growing, it's not doing anything. He said, Prabhupada said, oh, well, it's dead now. He said, just like a tree is alive, it dies, it falls in the forest, and you see this dead, you know, now the soul is left. Now it's dead, you know. So in other words, and that's the body that's left. But there was life at one point. And so this was kind of a whole new insight. I don't think we had heard this before about, I think we'd heard something about mountains and the Bhagavatam, but the fact that things like, and then Prabhupada talked about moving and non-moving living entities. He said this is an example. What does that mean? We say the non-moving living, it doesn't just mean plants, there's also other life forms. So these were the kinds of new and exciting things that Srila Prabhupada was always giving us that sometimes were rather surprising. I was also, when Srila Prabhupada was in Miami in 1974, as you can see, I moved around a little bit, you know, in those days. But when Prabhupada was in Miami, again, we were under the banyan trees. He did these Bhagavad Gita classes outside, under the banyan trees. It was actually a beautiful setting. It was very, very nice. It was just really ecstatic. And different questions were asked. And probably there was a lot of questions and answers after Prabhupada would give his talk. And it was kind of a very nice, relaxed atmosphere. We had lights around. We're under the trees. It's in the evening. And someone asked about how we become devotees. So Prabhupada said, why we have all become devotees? Anybody want to guess? What did Prabhupada say? I think you... Were you there? You were there. Sureshwar was there. He said, you have all come because of Prashadam. And then I remember he turned to Avirama, and if you know, Avirama is a very intelligent, you know, devotee, and, you know, probably, you know, very philosophically inclined. He understood the philosophy. And Prabhupada said, you too. You have come because of Prashadam. So that was another one of those sort of unexpected responses. So, but that was very, very sweet, and everybody was surprised. And then, I don't know if it's that night or the next night, in contrast, this very, very warm, kind of joking with the devotee's mood, In Miami, you have to understand how things were back in the late 60s, early 70s, kind of like end of the hippie era. We did get some strange people that came to the temple. Some of them, those strange temple, became wonderful devotees who were devotees to this day. Some of them did not. Some of them, who knows, you know, they were, you know, probably on some particular intoxication and decided this was kind of far out, but they may not have been that sincere. But anyway, this one very strange devotee, I think he only lasted a few days, and we were all even then we were a little concerned about him. He was a little bizarre, and I think he probably had taken a few too many drugs. And so he says to Srila Prabhupada, and it was in kind of a challenging mood. It wasn't really in a nice, you know, please Swamiji, and we didn't say, at that time we were saying Srila Prabhupada. That was past the Swamiji stage. He said, why do we have to follow the four regular principles? And Prabhupada replied in a way that was like a thunderbolt, so you will not go to hell. And the young man, you could physically, like, move back 5 feet. It was almost like a force, you know, knocking him backwards. And he was stunned. Now, I don't think he took that to heart and did follow the principle. But in other words, again, Prabhupada's mood would vary because of the circumstance. This person, he needed to be told. You know, that he needed a strong message. Where others might have a very gentle message would have been better. So this is, again, the spiritual master has this ability to know how to speak to each person according to time, place, and circumstance. Okay. Another time, actually, we met Srila Prabhupada, when was this, in Los Angeles? It must have been 1974. I think I traveled out there because we went to the San Francisco Rath Yatra. Remember the very famous San Francisco Rath Yatra that's in the video where Prabhupada's jumping up and down? I was there at the time. That was really, really ecstatic. But before that, he flew into Los Angeles a couple of days before. And because it was L.A., which is a very big temple in those days, and people were sort of flocking from all over. I was from Miami. Somehow, my Sankirtan party, I was on traveling Sankirtan. I was a Sankirtan leader. And by some coincidence, my party would tend to end up in places where Srila Prabhupada was visiting. You know, it was just sort of, we kind of arbitrarily picked a route. Oh, Srila Prabhupada's going to be in Los Angeles. We should do Sankirtan in Los Angeles. So anyway, we were there, and huge crowd, 400 or 500 devotees. In those days, that was a huge crowd. And it was an ecstatic crowd to the point almost unruly. I mean, we were getting out of hand. You know, it was like hundreds of devotees, like, you know, charging through the airport. I mean, the other passengers were standing up in their chairs so they wouldn't get trampled. You know, and there was a lot of shoving and pushing. Everybody wanting to get at Srila Prabhupada. So that it was almost like he was almost a little bit, you know, jostled a little. And afterwards, he was not at all happy. It wasn't like, oh, so nice, the devotees are so enthusiastic. He was not happy. He said, we weren't acting like, you know, ladies and gentlemen. We weren't acting properly, you know, that we really needed to control ourselves a little bit. So, you know, he was always instructing us to act in a very proper way. Not that we act like, you know, in public in ways that, you know, that people are going to think that we're some sort of, you know, crazy mob or something. You know, that wasn't pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. A couple other short ones, Srila Prabhupada. Also in Miami, one devotee who had been very much, you know, who had been very strongly attracted to Christianity and to Jesus, he just had to ask Prabhupada this. I forget his reason. It was something about that Jesus says, I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning, the end, and that. You know, I forget the quote exactly. I'm not expert at that. But he asked Srila Prabhupada, was Jesus Christ an incarnation of Lord Brahma? And Prabhupada wasn't real happy with the question, you could tell. And he kind of, something, and he said something, and we didn't hear it. Later, we asked Shruti Kirti, who was his servant, and Prabhupada said, maybe. Again, it was one of those, maybe. In other words, yes, it could be, but it wasn't that important. In other words, you know, let's not get too diverted from, you know, the main purpose of Krishna consciousness. But yet, yes, that could be a possibility. So I don't know. To this day, I don't know exactly how to answer that, you know, what he meant by that. But going back to, I'm jumping around a little bit here, back to D.C., just one kind of interesting thing. You know, the anniversary of ISKCON comes up in July, you know, with the time, isn't it, when ISKCON was founded. So, it was, you know, we used to celebrate that day of the founding of ISKCON. And so that day came when Srila Prabhupada was there. So they brought him this big cake. They wheeled it in, you know, like on a table with wheels. And now, those of you in India, I don't know whether you, this wouldn't be probably the same here, but in America, and I think other Western countries, the custom is that you give the honored guest, cuts the cake, and hands out the first place. You don't do that here, do you? In other words, so they bring it out, and they hand Srila Prabhupada the knife. And he looks at it, can't figure it out. It's kind of like, in one sense, you're thinking you're asking your spiritual master to serve you. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so inappropriate. But that is the American custom. It's actually an honor. You know, and you give it to like the host or hostess, we cut the first piece. So Prabhupada was bewildered for 2 or 3 seconds, and the devotees were, you know, and he just, without, you know, okay. So he just, you know, Prabhupada would just go along with things like that. In other words, all right, they want me to do this, I will do this. You know, he often took that mood, almost like, I'm serving the devotees, this is what they want me to do, this is what I'm supposed to do, it's your country, I'll follow your custom and do this. So, you know, Prabhupada was very, very gracious like that. You know, it was like about 2 seconds, you know, then he figured out what they wanted, he went along with it. You know? Also there, in just a couple quick... I might as well get all these out, all these pastimes while I'm here and I've got the mic, right? So one thing we learned, you probably all know this. You all know about offering salt with fruit? Is that common? I don't know. Anyway, we offered Srila Prabhupada a tray of fruit when he came in, and he says, where's the salt? He said, you always offer salt with fruit. That was new to us. We didn't know that. It's not a custom so much in America. Anyway, like that. Here's another interesting one. Another one of those insights of Srila Prabhupada. The last place he had been, the toilet apparently didn't work properly. So Srila Prabhupada, we had just rebuilt this bathroom. This was remodeled, brand new. So we couldn't imagine anything wrong with it. Srila Prabhupada said, are you sure that the toilet works? I said, of course it works. Yes, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, get me some chapati dough. So Prabhupada took some chapati dough, rolled it in a ball, and he put it and he flushed it to check it out. He wanted to make sure that it worked. You know, we thought that was a little excessive. Now, later, fortunately, Prabhupada was out of the room. This brand new, you know, glass shower door fell out and smashed on the floor. You know, and I say fortunately, no one was there. So, in other words, you know, it curbs our pride a little bit. It's almost like saying, you sure everything is all right here? And it wasn't. Again, how does Prabhupada know these things? Who knows? Yeah. One other quick one here, just as far as this little incidents. New York Rath Yatra, 76. Wonderful Rath Yatra down Fifth Avenue. Srila Prabhupada was so pleased the devotees had managed. Fifth Avenue is the biggest, most important street in America, in New York City. The financial district, everything. Fifth Avenue. We got our parade, Rath Yatra parade, right down, many, many blocks down Fifth Avenue. Prabhupada was very, very happy. So Prabhupada's giving his lecture to the crowd. I don't remember it exactly, you know, we're, you know. But unfortunately, as sometimes happened, there were people who were heckling. And this one particular, very loud, obnoxious man just kept yelling and horrible things, and he was really becoming offensive, yelling at and interrupting Srila Prabhupada speaking. So, is this on the internet and everything? Okay, I'll tell it anyway. Anyway, this one devotee, I'll tell it. I might as well give him credit. His name is Vaninath Basu. He's an African American devotee. He's about 6'8" or something. Very, very big, tall. But he's a very gentle, mild mannered, wonderful, nice devotee. I didn't know who it was. He told me later it was him. I didn't know this. He came running up and punched the guy, and the guy fell back in the fountain he was standing on. You know, and that was the end of that. And later, Srila Prabhupada said, who was that black man who hit the person? And they said, oh, it was him. And he goes, oh, okay. And Prabhupada smiled. And kind of laughed. He thought it was rather funny. You know. He didn't say, I approve of it. He just smiled. Okay. Right. Last thing I'm going to talk about is how Srila Prabhupada always encouraged the devotees in little things and in big things. Srila Prabhupada gave us the original model of devotee care. Some of you here are on this Devotee Care Committee in strategic planning. And one thing I've noticed in the publications and the things that the Devotee Care team put out, I always see lots and lots of quotes and examples from Srila Prabhupada. Lots of them. And which is entirely appropriate, because Prabhupada exemplified how to care for the devotees. His deep concern and love for his disciples was amazing. He spent a lot of time with the leaders, but he cared equally for every devotee, and every disciple of Srila Prabhupada will tell you that. We all felt equally loved by Srila Prabhupada, even if we didn't have a lot of personal association, and even if Srila Prabhupada had to spend more of his time with leaders, guiding the movement, giving them instruction like that. And it was manifest many times. Of course, you've all seen probably in the videos that Srila Prabhupada would often give out cookies. I don't know when that started. At some point, he gave out cookies to the children. I remember when we went up to San Francisco during that Ratha Yatra in 74, this is really more a story about my wife and daughter. She had a baby at the time, and our children were usually really good, and they could sit in Bhagavatam class and not make any noise. So my wife was able to stay, but some other kids were making noise. Hare Krishna. So some sannyasi comes and says, all the women and children have to leave. All the babies, all the children had to leave. So they all had to go in a back room, and my wife said she was so disappointed. Here she was, driven, gone thousands of miles to see her spiritual master and wasn't able to even hear his Bhagavatam class. But then, at the end of the class, the doors open, and they said, Prabhupada wants all the children to come. So all the mothers and children brought their children forward, and it's kind of like the sea of sannyasis had to part. You know, all the women and children came forward, and Prabhupada handed out the cookies. And I remember my daughter, for some reason, she couldn't hold it very well, so Prabhupada, he put it in her hand and held her hand with it, you know. And of course, my wife was ecstatic, you know. So, in other words, you know, where there may have been some disappointment, Prabhupada found ways to make everybody happy like that. Another example of that is when he was in Miami again, my wife went in with my oldest daughter, Gopinath. She was about 6 at the time, or 7. I think she had been in Gurukula, but she was back visiting when Prabhupada was there. And she was somewhat artistic, but, I mean, she'd done this art thing. She made a picture of Krishna, and she put glitter on it. And let's face it, it was kind of a childish, you know, art piece, you know, that a kid would do. I mean, it was nice, but, you know, it was a kid's art, you know, thing. And so they went in, and my little daughter gave it to Srila Prabhupada, and he studied it, and he looked at it, and he said, very great art, you know. I mean, you know, how more encouraged could you be, you know? And then, of course, my wife said, you know how they have this saying, how you feel like a fool in front of your spiritual master? Most of us actually not only felt like fools, we acted like fools, you know. And so he turned to my wife and said, and who are you? And she said, I'm her mother. She didn't even tell her his name, you know. Anyway, I did something equally dumb in the next story. But and then after that, the next day, Prabhupada went on a tour of the property. And we had about 2 or 3 acres there in Miami in Coconut Grove. And, you know, it was very nice. And they're showing Prabhupada around. And now all of us, most of us were out on Sankirtan. We went on Sankirtan. It didn't matter if Srila Prabhupada was there. We went out on Sankirtan. We'd see him in the morning and night and during the day, you know. And so it was really just the temple president, maybe another officer too. And mostly it was like the women and children that were back. And so they're all following behind Srila Prabhupada during this tour. Now, my middle daughter, Lalita, I'm in Lalita Saki now, was about 1.5 years old or two. And she had, of course, always seen Prabhupada's pictures. You know, we'd always say, this is Srila Prabhupada, like that. And, you know, in her little mind, actually seeing this was the real thing. The person that you've always told me his pictures, here he is in life. And so she kept saying, Prabhupada, the whole time. You know, she kept, you know, she was just like amazed. This is him. This is, you know, who I've been seeing this picture, everyone's telling me to bow down to and everything, you know. And so at the end of, they came to the end. Prabhupada's going up the steps. He turns around and said, who is that baby calling my name? You know, and so my wife holds up Lalita, 2-year-old, and Prabhupada looks at it, and the way it's reported to me, it's one of those things where there was this look like they'd known each other for a few hundred years or something, and my wife said, my daughter, she was like trembling and almost like having ecstatic symptoms as a baby, and just like just frozen there, just staring at Prabhupada, their eyes be, and Prabhupada just said, thank you very much. So, again, little things like that, just those little moments, those are the things that you'd remember for the rest of your life. How Prabhupada was, just like so encouraging and just touched the hearts and, touched the soul, when you had contact with him. That's the thing that's a little hard to explain, because we know that Vapu and Vani are both there, and Vani is more important, and it is. The words of Srila Prabhupada's instructions are most important, but there was something also very special about his Vapu, about his personal presence and having that. And it's hard to describe because you don't really see it when you're watching video and like that. I mean, this sort of effulgence that Prabhupada had, this spiritual energy that just emanated from him. It's hard to describe, but we all felt it. It was palpable. It was something that you could experience like that. But this is the only incident why I actually ever spoke to Srila Prabhupada. It was very profound. My wife had made ice cream for him before that he really, it was reported that he liked. So in Washington, D.C., we made up ice cream, and we knew he liked mango, so we made mango ice cream. I went out and bought the ingredients, and we made the ice cream. And I got in that night to Prabhupada to bring it to him. I brought in the ice cream, and they said, oh, Prabhupada just had ice cream. They flew it in specially from New Vrindavan. It was on dry ice. It was from the cows in New Vrindavan, the special ice cream. I go, oh. And so they said, well, Prabhupada, the devotees brought ice cream also. And he says, oh, what flavor? We said mango. He goes, oh, let me try. Let me have that. So fortunately, we thought the mango might win out. So he took the ice cream, took a couple bites of it, and he said, very good. He says, this is the best. He said, this is better than Bengali ice cream. Now, I don't even know if they make ice cream in Bengal, but I guess what he meant is this. I asked Bhakti Chiruswami about it. I said, what do you think Prabhupada meant? He says, well, he means it's on the level of Bengali sweets, with very, very famous, Bengali sweets are very, very high quality. So he was comparing it. So that made me feel pretty good. And then what he said to me, he says, what are the ingredients? What is it made from? And I went completely blank. I couldn't even, I had bought them, but I couldn't. Talk about feeling like a fool. Here I am, a complete idiot. Finally I remember. Oh, it was real tough. It was like milk, cream, mango, and sugar, it was a real hard list, so finally, he said, bring it every night, actually he did say one thing. He says, what service are you doing? Now, I think for 1 month in my life, I did Sankirtan mostly, but I was doing, for a couple of months there, I went out to the airport and I was distributing big books in the airport. And that happened to me right at that time. So I said, Prabhupada, I'm distributing your big books in the airport. Oh, very nice. And that was like perfect timing for me, because it wasn't like I did that a lot, but I was at that time. So, and that was about it. But the thing is, it's not momentous. It's not something you would write down, but it's something that, 37 years later, I'll remember, every day of my life. Any encounter, any exchange with Srila Prabhupada had that effect on you. And it's something that, it stays with you, those little relationships like that. Let's see, any others here? Check my list here. I think that's about the extent of my relationship, connection, and pastimes with Srila Prabhupada. But I think that we need to think about, as we go into all of our service, we're all involved in spreading Krishna consciousness, and one way or the other, whatever our service is that vital cog in the wheel of the Sankirtan movement progressing, of Krishna consciousness expanding throughout the world. And particularly, we go into these strategic planning meetings with the idea of how can we better plan in a way that Srila Prabhupada would be pleased? How can we think like he did in that future, far vision? what is needed to be done to make the world Krishna conscious? And what do we need to do to make our relationships better and to work better with devotees and to care for devotees? I think we need to just remember the mood of Srila Prabhupada, and if that becomes our guiding principle, it's described actually there's three things that we need to follow. We need to follow the instructions of the Guru. We need to follow the example. So we have the prachar, we have the achar, the example, the words, and also the mood. I forget the Sanskrit word. Anybody know what it is? Third one? What is it? No? For the mood of the... Okay. In here. So part of what we need to do as we continue this International Society for Krishna Consciousness that Srila Prabhupada founded and in charge to us, his followers, his disciples, his grand disciples, his followers for many generations, we have this great legacy that we must continue and we must increase if possible. Prabhupada said, at least maintain what I've given you, if not increase. So we need to remember Prabhupada's instructions, Prabhupada's examples, and also, more very, very importantly, Srila Prabhupada's mood. How did Srila Prabhupada preach? What were his examples? What did he show us in his relationships with devotees? In the loving care that he gave to his disciples? In the way that he brought in and welcomed people from all over the world, from all backgrounds? You know, many of us, you know, very badly mannered, bad habits, you know, no spiritual intelligence, no knowledge of the scriptures. Prabhupada was able to connect with us in a way that we became, not only that we understood Krishna consciousness, but we became enlivened, enthusiastic to take this up as our life and soul, as our full-time business. To assist Srila Prabhupada. And that's our mood. You know, not I'm doing this, or I'm doing this big thing, or I'm doing this big project, I have this big position. Every one of us are very small, humble servants of Srila Prabhupada. But in that small, humble service to Srila Prabhupada, we know that Srila Prabhupada is pleased. And when Srila Prabhupada is pleased with us and gives his blessings, then there is no doubt that there will be great success. So it can't just be Jai Srila Prabhupada, just, you know, lip service. It has to be action. It means that in our work, in our service, that we are always meditating upon Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And what would please him in going forward in spreading Krishna consciousness? So I'll stop at that point. Are there any questions, comments, or anyone to add something? Jagajivan Prabhu? Is there a microphone?
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, for inspiring us to think of Srila Prabhupada. It's very important for us. Thank you. I was thinking of these, some examples of Srila Prabhupada bursting the bubble of our misconceptions so many times, and somewhat enjoying it. There were a few examples which I'd like to share. Two happened in Caracas. At the time in Caracas, it's 1975, we had this very beautiful house the devotees had rented overlooking the city. It was just a great location, and the house was a very opulent house, you know. So the devotees came to Prabhupada and they said to Prabhupada, isn't this such a beautiful house? You know, they're thinking, this is such a nice house, Srila Prabhupada. Thinking, well, Prabhupada said, yes, it's so nice. Prabhupada looked at them and he said, nice house means no one complains about the kirtan. About the kirtan.
No one complains about the kirtan.
No one says anything about it because of that house. The neighbors were all complaining. So Prabhupada knew. Said, no, now nice house means no one says anything about the kirtan. Another example, they had also peacocks there. They had got all these peacocks, you know. And as we know, you know, Krishna has peacocks all over. So they had this idea that peacocks were very wonderful and spiritual and like that, you know. So they went to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada, look at all these wonderful peacocks. They're so nice. He said, and the Prabhupada looked at them and he said, but they eat meat. They eat meat. So again, he blew their misconception. Another time when I visited Prabhupada in Los Angeles, I had before that passed through Dallas, and I was very impressed how the young children were repeating the Sanskrit. I was very impressed, you know. So when I went on Prabhupada's morning walk, he spoke with me on the morning walk, and I said, Prabhupada, I went through Dallas, and I was so impressed by the young children who were able to repeat the Sanskrit. They memorized the Sanskrit so nicely, you know. And Prabhupada looked at me and said, but they do not know the meaning.
He said
the meaning. They do not know the meaning of the verses.
he said that to them in Dallas, too.
Oh, in Dallas.
Yeah.
Also, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So here he is bursting the bubbles of our ideas. You were mentioning the rocks and like that. I just wanted to add some of those personal experiences.
Thank you, Prabhu. Those are very, very wonderful stories that illustrate some of those principles of Srila Prabhupada. Any of other senior devotees or disciples of Srila Prabhupada inspired to add anything? Any other? Prahlad Maharaj? Before he speaks, I was going to say Pralhadananda Swami is very, very senior. 1969 you came, or 68?
68.
What?
68.
Thank you.
One time I was asking, I became the head pujari in Buffalo the same day I moved into the temple.
Right.
And there were three deities. And there, first, when I first was coming to the temple, they were on a bookshelf. So I had no idea who they were. And then my godbrother, Burjan Peru, had left to join Toshan Krishna Peru to open a center in North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And he had built an altar for them. So I asked Burjan when I became the head pujari as soon as I moved in, I said, who are they? So he said, I don't know.
Who were they?
So then when Prabhupada came to Buffalo a few months later, then I asked Srila Prabhupada, I said, who is Lord Jagannath? So Prabhupada went into meditation for a while, and he said, he's Krishna. I said, oh, that's very good. I felt a little relieved I was worshiping Krishna. And then he started to talk about every year in San Francisco, they have this festival there. And they bring the deities out and they put them on a cart. And then he was just about to say something like, you don't have to worry about that. But then I saw Prabhupada stop for a second. He was very introspective. And he said, that's all right. And that year we actually had a Rath Yatra in Buffalo. Our first, probably only Rath Yatra we had. I mean, I have a lot of stories, but as far as figuring out what's contradictory or not, I mean, I was in Dallas when Prabhupada was there every time. And of course, well, I guess one time we were talking with Satsarup Maharaj. I was the temple president of Austin at that time. And we were in Dallas. And as usual, sometimes the temple presidents would come to Prabhupada and tell them all the problems that were going on in his temple. But Prabhupada didn't really like that mood so much in America. He left America to the management there. So after a little while, Satsarup Maharaj said some of the problems, and then Prabhupada stopped and he said, devotee? Devotee means first class. If they're devotees, they're first class. And that ended the conversation about... And Prabhupada used to talk about different things. One time I was sitting there and Prabhupada was talking to us in Dallas. And then Prabhupada said, they're so foolish that they have no idea. They're eating margarine. And then Prabhupada started to talk about his experience during World War II. He said, during World War II, the Germans they discover that you can make margarine out of stool. You can get the fat out of the stool and make margarine. And they're thinking margarine is better than butter. Anyhow.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maybe a couple minutes. Anyone else like to say something? Anyone? All right. Over here.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. It's my really good fortune to be here with all the senior devotees here. So, say as you explained about the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, as in West, so it was really very wonderful, very nice to hear these all things of Prabhupada's, how he spread the message of Krishna in West. So, I just want to know, suppose if Srila Prabhupada, as he explained this message in 90s and 70s in USA abroad, so suppose if he is in 21st century, as you have experienced the time with him lot of, so you know him very well, so suppose Krishna Srila Prabhupada would be right now in 21st century, so what would be message to people, I mean youth of Indians, so what he would explain to us?
I don't know if I quite heard the question. What Srila Prabhupada was in the West in the 70s. What about India?
So as he preached in the West to the people of, you know, Western people, so suppose he would be in the 21st century here in India right now. So what would be his message to us, to the youth of 21st century of India?
What would Srila Prabhupada tell us now? What would he want us to do now in, now in India?
Yeah.
Prabhupada's messages and purposes were fairly consistent. They had, you know, obviously the ways of doing it, the particular activity might vary in different times and circumstances, but the basic process Prabhupada gave was pretty clear. Opening temples, having festivals, distributing prasadam, distributing books, making devotees, preaching Krishna consciousness, kirtan, harinam. That didn't really change very much. Now, he might do it in different times and circumstances, what would work in one country, what would work in another, but he really gave us that same basic formula everywhere throughout the world. So I think Srila Prabhupada would just say, do more of that, just continue. But he might also tell us to, as he often did, to cooperate amongst ourselves. And that might be the one thing that he, I think, I don't want to speculate on what Srila Prabhupada would say, but he so often asked us to cooperate, and he was very disturbed when devotees didn't get along or had arguments like that. So I think he would just encourage us to work together and cooperate and continue to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world.
No. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Maybe last question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you very much. Prabhuji mentioned in the end of the class that just saying Jai Srila Prabhupada is good, but then doing something for him and continuing that service. So I was just thinking that going to be what factors or what it takes for somebody to shift this platform of just saying Jai Srila Prabhupada to the platform of actually getting to do things, practical things for Prabhupada's mission or his society.
So your question is, what does someone need to do for Srila Prabhupada?
No.
Just got to say it real quick.
What factors, what are the different factors which will bring anybody from the platform of simply saying Jai Srila Prabhupada to the platform of actually doing consistently, incessantly services for the mission and Srila Prabhupada's pleasure?
Yes. How do we go from just, you know, lip service and just glorifying Srila Prabhupada to actually pleasing him through our service? As you know, of course, Srila Prabhupada was very, very keen on practical service. Actually, it was a combination. Spiritual practice, sadhana, and service together, balanced. Both of those were emphasized all the time. You know, chanting our rounds, you know, following the principles, our sadhana needed to be there. That was the basis. That was understood. That has to be there. Then after that, or alongside of that, is any devotional service, actually. Prabhupada was pleased by any devotional service, but and particularly those things which led to spreading Krishna consciousness, to bringing in more devotees, you know, to increasing the Krishna conscious movement. But see, again, here's where Prabhupada was not predictable. He wrote to Tulsi Bajari, said, "You are doing the most important service, taking care of Tulsi Devi. You will go back to Godhead." Right? To Sankirtan people, he would say, "You are doing the most..." There's a very famous story, I'll just end with this one. There was this Radha-Damodar traveling party in America in the 70s. Huge party. They had buses going everywhere. They were distributing more books than anyone, although Los Angeles was giving them a good run for their money. They, about 100 brahmacharis, distributing books, surrendering. So much service they were doing. Wonderful service. They were also, I would say, a little proud. Sometimes there was this attitude that they were the real devotees. They were doing the real service. You know, and the rest of us, householders, what were we doing? Sitting in the temple, you know. But not so much, but a little bit, just a little of that sometimes. Srila Prabhupada went to Atlanta, right after he left Miami, actually, in 75. All the Radha-Damodar bus was there. So many devotees were there, hundreds of Sankirtan devotees. And a Sankirtan devotee raises his hand, says, "What service pleases you the most, Srila Prabhupada?" And they were all expecting to say, "Book distribution." Srila Prabhupada said, "That you learn to love Krishna." I think that was the quote. Sureshwar, are you still here? You were there. What? That you love Krishna. So, ultimately, that was it. Srila Prabhupada engaged us in so many services really for one purpose. To purify ourselves so that we would develop our love for Krishna. So that's how Prabhupada was really the most pleased. Okay? All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.